Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott back again for another episode of the Nullcast. Bud, this will be part two of our mailbag episode, and I thought the first one went well, and we'll see where we go in this second rendition. Bud Louisiana Hot Sauce. I mean, they make podcasts like these possible in general. They've been our title sponsor for 2 years now, somebody that we've been very fortunate to work with and couldn't ask for a better partner. And as far as a product that you and I both genuinely appreciate and enjoy and use in everyday life, it's great to be able to partner with people like them, and just want to remind people that they bring podcasts like these to them and make them possible.
Hey, man, you got questions at Louisiana Hot Sauce? The answers are simple. Three simple ingredients, one great product, Louisiana Hot Sauce, our title sponsor. Very appreciative to have them.
Next series of questions surrounds the defense. First one is, nothing frustrated me more last year when our defense would play an up-tempo offense and our defenders would look so confused on their alignment that ended up translating to busted assignments. Can we expect the new regime to have a better/more efficient system, and could going against a no-huddle offense at practice help?
Well, I do think that going against a no-huddle offense in practice could help, certainly. They already practiced at tempo in practice. Like, you watch them in practice, which, of course, we weren't allowed to do. But from what I understand, of course, Ingram, they were already practicing at tempo because Jimbo wanted to maximize the number of reps. Now, that was for learning and development purposes. Once in the game, they would slow it down to, you know, an excruciating grind. But I absolutely do think that running an offense that is more similar to what your main opponents run, at least in terms of alignment and tempo and philosophy, look, Florida's a spread team now. Clemson's a spread team and has been for, you know, about 10 years. Miami is primarily a spread team now. I think that doing that is what you primarily do in practice, and what your good guys do in practice will help some with the defense. But I think that it's also just going to be do a better job of hopefully keeping things simpler at times on defense to deal with the tempo.
Like, the up-tempo talk at practice is interesting to me because I'm sure that we were able to, like, operate at a faster pace and maybe get more snaps in. But did anything about this team at any time during Fisher's tenure ever look like we executed a lot of the basic principles that surrounded an offense that would try to use tempo against you? Do you think we were ever able to practice at a high enough level with a tempo that maybe paired the ability to execute things that offenses with pace so frequently deploy?
I completely agree with you on that. I mean, they did not look as smooth sometimes, I think, as other, you know, elite defenses have against tempo. Now, there's a bit of myopicness in this, in that, look, one of the reasons everybody's trying to run tempo is because it does put a lot of stress on the defense. You talk to defensive guys, they hate facing that stuff because it does help to just take small defensive mistakes and blow them wide open. And that's just something that look, Florida State was a victim of, but now is actually going to get to take advantage of on an offensive side, which will be a great equalizer. They are still going to make mistakes on defense against tempo. You know who else does? Alabama and Georgia and Texas and Oklahoma and Ohio State, because it's tough to defend. Go watch Ohio State against Oklahoma this year. Baker Mayfield goes into the horseshoe and rips them a new one with crazy tempo. Go watch Alabama struggle with Johnny Manziel. Look, certainly good quarterbacks no doubt have a big impact in that, but also the tempo of the game. It does matter, and it causes problems with defense, which is why I think as a Florida State fan, you should be happy that Florida State is now trying to incorporate a lot more tempo in the offense, because the defense is going to continue at times to struggle with it. Now, will they be able to get lined up better against it? I think probably, yeah, because they're better players and they're like their A squad as opposed to just their, you know, their scout team offense are going to be running it. So when they go best on best, they'll be seeing it from their better players as opposed to from the scout team.
They'll also see it against players who have the ability to execute some of the principles. Like, and you were right about this. You would say that a quarterback's ability to run like a zone read would regress significantly based off the time that he had been on campus. And I'm just referencing little simple things like that.
That was embarrassing.
We were never able to execute well, and I'm very skeptical as if we were ever to able to even put it at a level in practice that made people defended at a decent level.
You could tell it wasn't something that the coaching staff like believed in and taught well, because they screwed it up with every single quarterback they had. And I was like, all right, well, eventually, it's probably not the fault of the quarterback. I'm guessing it's something that you are generally good at what you practice. And they did not practice that very much. I can tell you that for a fact.
Next question is a rather simple one, but that is, what scheme are we going to run on defense?
They're going to run the Michigan State Cover 4 defensive scheme, which is a pretty aggressive scheme. Their corners are going to be in press coverage a lot of the time, probably even more than they were under the previous defense. Now, it is a Cover 4 defense primarily, which is more of your 2-4 stuff. That's not to say they won't run 1-3. They won't play man. They will play man. In fact, a lot of times Cover 4 actually converts to man coverage, especially against verts. Verts meaning vertical routes. But they're going to run basically the Michigan State defense. I know some other outlets have reported that they're going to run more of like the Saban Kirby Smart defense, and I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense to hire a guy who's been a key cog in an excellent college defense. That's a different type of system. And then be like, by the way, I want you to run this. That's not I don't hire a great barbecue cook and ask him to do sushi. So, to me, I think that they are going to run the Michigan State defense. The defensive ends are going to be asked to get up the field a lot and create pressure on the quarterback. A lot is asked of the linebackers, which is one thing here that I can tell you I'm not super high on Florida State's linebackers as far as the talent level, and I think that's one position that has not been developed very well over the last couple of years. So I think even if the coaching is better at the linebacker position, I think it probably will be, I think that they are probably still going to be the weak part of your defense for at least one more year. So puts a lot of pressure on the linebackers. The ends, I think, are really going to enjoy this. They are going to get upfield a lot. It might be a little bit less read and react than it was under the previous scheme. It will absolutely give up big plays. It will give up big plays. But that pairs well with what you're trying to do on offense, right? And we talk about fitting your offense to your defense and that kind of stuff. They are going to try to force three and outs. They're going to try to force negative plays, turnovers. And to do that, you got to be real aggressive. Now, granted, turnovers, there's a good luck component in there, but the other stuff is three and out. Obviously, you need to try to be pretty aggressive. The downside of that is, what are you giving up? Every defense takes something. Every defense gives up something. The defense will give up big plays, for sure, both in terms of guys being open and also in terms of guys just winning one-on-one matchups. It is a defense that is going to dare the opponent to beat them down the field. Hey, if your guy's a lot better than my guy and he can make a play on my guy down the field one-on-one, okay, then do it. I think that's a really good fit for what Florida State has defensively. They've got a lot of really good defensive backs who I think will excel in playing playing press coverage and covering their guys down the field. I expect that Harlan Barnett is going to be able to teach his corners to do a better job in press than the previous staff did. I did not think that the previous staff did a great job of teaching press technique. And that's not just my opinion, right? Like, we've seen some guys talk about that with some FSU's guys in the draft. And we've also seen some, I know some good high school coaches who are defensive coaches. And they're like, what the hell is Florida State teaching there technique-wise with their corners in press? So that could be an area to look for and say, okay, I think they could be better there. But they're primarily going to run your Cover 4 thing. If you don't know what Cover 4 is, this is kind of one of the limitations of the podcast format. To me, this is better illustrated, and we'll do this on Tomahawk Nation better. Trust me, we'll have some video cut-ups and whatnot. But that means both of your safeties are going to be very close to the line of scrimmage. You are not going to allow the football to be run on you. If you're going to beat Florida State, it's going to have to be through the air, and it's probably going to have to be deep. So you're going to have a quarterback who can throw it deep, and you're going to have a guy who can go up and make catches. They really do try to take away the easy stuff. There's no doubt about it. Some defenses force you to execute the easy stuff over and over again if you're going to beat them. This defense is the opposite. You might only have to execute one time as long as it's a deep ball. But if you do it, guess what? The offense is going to get the ball back, and that's more possessions for them. And you'll probably mix in some three and outs, some negative plays, maybe some turnovers. And that's what they want to do.
But probably an appropriate place to thank Madison Social and the people at For the Table Restaurant Group, somebody that we've been able to partner with since day one. We could not have anybody better to work with, ever so fortunate, and we're excited. We're excited to be able to continue to work with him, and we're really excited to be able to talk about something that will be new for us and have a little bit of a in-person interaction and experience leading up to the spring game.
Absolutely, man. Matt is social and Forward Table Restaurant Group. They've been with us since the beginning. Maybe do a little debut a new beer at Township for a little pregame action for the spring game. Pretty awesome. More details on that to come, but a chance to come meet us, come interact, come meet fellow Knollcast fans and fellow Knolls at a great Knoll-owned business before you get to watch the new offense in Doak Campbell Stadium. So very appreciative of those guys, and we'll have more details on those events for you soon.
Next question is, who in our opinion ends up starting at Star in the fall?
I have no idea.
I was going to say, it's none. Almost impossible to answer this question. Between some of the confusion at pieces of the roster and what the coaching staff is going to want that position to look like, it is very hard to say.
That's a good question, but let's table that one for the fall, or at least until after spring. Because, look, you don't know what these guys, what these freshmen are doing when they get on campus. You know, we know that Carlos Becker had like an ankle clean-out thing, and he's probably going to miss spring, so we'll see what happens when he gets back. He's a talented kid, and we'll just see. Look, I doubt the coaching staff knows. They're probably going to try all these guys out.
Next question is, how does the linebacker situation turn out? Expecting a lot from Adonis Dontavious, can we expect to see Josh Brown or Leonard Warner?
Dontavious, I think, is a guy who maybe could take a step forward. Adonis, I don't know, man. He's not physical.
Just take whatever you get from him as a little bit of a bonus. I wouldn't expect a whole lot.
He's just not a physical guy. So to me, no. I don't expect a whole lot out of him unless he gets a lot more physical. I guess we'll see. You know, Josh Brown's a guy certainly with a lot of upside. I want to see him in blitz. And Leonard Warner, I think, is a guy that's going to have to be good for them. They don't have a whole lot of talent at that position right now, and those guys have not been developed very well. So that is certainly a position that is more than likely going to continue to be the weakness of this defense. They're going to have to recruit their answers for that, which I know we'll talk about in a future recruiting show.
Yep. Yeah, I think they got two decent pieces to work around, and Brown and Warner. Be interesting to see what they do with that. Dontavious Jackson, that's obviously your leader of the unit, and a kid that I think at least has the ability to be a really significant player, and curious to see how he comes out of summer and where his level of play is next year, because that certainly is your highest ceiling when you look at what you might get out of the linebacker position next year. But the next question is, with the addition of Barnett on staff, do you think he'll bring back the mindset of consistently out-hitting our opponents on defense? Seems that in the past couple of years, I can count on one hand the amount of times that we have out-hit teams we should consistently out-hit. Lots of catch tackles by our defense. Every coach from an eighth grade level above wants people to thump, wants people to run and hit. And I think you just maybe a general higher level of aggression, maybe guys that are able to play with a freer sense of responsibility. Do you see more of like the instantaneous and almost instinctive type of plays where you have like violent collisions like that? I guess you could see that as maybe a path to the situation to out hit, but really I think I'd talk more about a general level of physicalness that you play with rather than trying to identify if you out hit somebody.
I think that's exactly right, man. I think the result will be that Florida State hits more than it has in the last year or two. I don't think that the mindset is really going to be all that different. I think it'll just be in the result. And your point about the guys maybe freeing up and thinking less is probably a really good one. I do think there's probably some truth to that.
All right, bud. Next set of questions here surround the offense. First is, do you see tight end McDonald playing early alongside McKitty? If so, how do you see Willie using these two? And do you see them on the field at the same time?
Well, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of two tight end sets, to be honest. I think that Trey McKitty is going to be a breakout player for this offense, which I know we'll talk about in a later set of questions as well. But no, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of two tight end sets, and I don't think you're going to see McDonald play a lot early, because he's a guy that we know needs to add a good bit of muscle. Now, he is going to be flexed out as a tight end, and we'll see, you know, how Upshur, who's been a disappointment so far through his career, and Alexander Marshall, how those guys play. Marshall can stay healthy. That'd be interesting to see because he's more of a, I guess, traditional tight end rather than a flex guy. But look, freshman tight ends rarely play, and I don't think you're going to see Marshall play much. I'd be surprised if he had double-digit catches or anything like that, at least not early. I mean, obviously, later on in his career, certainly, but not in 2018.
In an earlier episode, I think you mentioned something referencing Willie Taggart's offense utilizing the tight end less. I could be wrong. With that being said, could an athlete like Trey McKitty have a breakout year within the offense due to some mismatches?
Huh, I feel like we absolutely just said this, and yes, I think he will. If McKitty can stay healthy, I expect a big year out of McKitty. If you guys play in college fantasy, might be a good person to draft off Florida State. Couple reasons. Number one, I think he's the best athlete at the tight end position. Number two, I think he's by far the best player at the tight end position. I don't think you have a whole lot after him. Number three, they don't have a whole lot of experience depth at receiver. So it's, as far as pass catching targets, McKitty is going to be one of the primary ones, and I do think he's going to play early, play often, and play well.
But the next question is Bailey Hawkman's this year's 2009 Christian Ponder? I was going to add to this question, but I think Noel fans know what I mean. If they don't, I know you guys can expand on it better than anybody. Okay?
Do you know what he means?
Does he mean that he is like a somewhat of a surprise choice as the quarterback, or is it the head coach going in a different direction with his quarterback selection? I don't know if that's what he's referencing, where Ponder was chosen over Weatherford as kind of like a sign of maybe a...
And it came out of nowhere, kind of...
A green shoot, if you want to use a gardening reference. I'm confused. I don't know exactly what he means, but that is my best guess to try to pair that together.
That's interesting. I think that Hawkman, a fresh start's probably good for him as well, and we'll see how he does in his offense. I don't think that like he's got the inside track to start or anything. It's really going to be wide open. Like when we say that, we're not joking. I mean, it's a brand new offense. We'll see how all their skills fit, how well they mesh, how well they lead the team. I'm not trying to give like generic we'll see answers, but literally we'll see. I think he's more athletic than people realize, probably because he's white. I mean, if you watch his high school tape, he really ran around pretty well in high school. The arm is not real big, but it's not, you know, a total noodle, which I guess you could say was sort of similar to Ponder. Although, you know, Ponder, before he got his shoulder crunched, had a pretty big arm there in 2009.
Yeah, so I got my years wrong. Really, that was 2007, the decision to go with Ponder over Weatherford, not 9. So
no, 08. 08 was the Ponder year, because 07 was still the Weatherford Xavier Lee stuff.
Yeah, the fun times. High water marks in the Florida State football program, definitely. Just fun to go back and even talk about now. So if you were the one who submitted this, if you want to maybe repackage it and send it back to us, we'll try to address it in a future show. But we're ever so fortunate that we have the listening audience that we do, and I'm still pretty flattered when people refer to myself or either of us as experts. But one people that we know are absolutely experts in their field are our partners at Resolution Home Loans, and somebody that we're really excited to be able to bring a great service to people, very specific service to people at an exceptionally high level. Noel fans, podcast supporters, and really excited for people to get to know the services and the people behind Resolution Home Loans.
Keeping with the mailbag theme, there are a lot of questions about the mortgage process as well. Chad and Shannon will walk you through it. They've got it all set up for you. Call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com. Dude, they can't make it more simple for you. Just a great company. We're very proud to rep them here, and let's get back into it. After using some Louisiana hot sauce on my lunch, there you go, can you give an honest expectation for the effectiveness of the offensive line this season against the likes of a Clemson? What will change it to? Okay, let's stop this. No.
I mean, that's a tough question to ask.
Let's refer to it as the Clemson, because referring to it as a Clemson, I think it implies that there are many teams that are up front like Clemson, and I think that is not true. there is probably only one team that is named Clemson that is like Clemson. So I would have to say absolutely not. I do not think they will do very well up front against Clemson. I think that they will probably get their ass beat up front by Clemson. Basically like Clemson does up front
right.
to every single
just
team, including,
everybody.
By the way,
just about everybody,
including pretty much the national champion this year. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but in that playoff game, those guys who all miraculously decided they were going to come back to school for whatever reason, they held Alabama's offense in check pretty well, and Alabama basically scored because Clemson's offense couldn't do a dang thing. So yeah, I do not think that they will do very well against Clemson's defensive front. Clemson's defensive front, because everybody decided to come back miraculously, is one of the primary reasons why they are like the overwhelming favorite to win the conference.
But when you get to drive around that stadium and run down that hill after rubbing a rock, you don't just leave that for an NFL contract. So, you know.
So are we going to find out what the heck happened there?
You like, get that experience as long as you can before you go do something silly for money.
If I tell you that, like, in 3 months, some guy that writes for, like, Yahoo or USA Today or something breaks out a headline, and it's like, you know, Clemson discovers loophole right. in yeah. ability to pay for like $100 million insurance policy or something like that. Are you surprised at all?
I don't think that, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. Clemson, I respect your program. It's all the same game, but I certainly think there's more to that story than just a couple guys deciding to come back to give one, you know, another shot at it.
I agree with that. Let's take the second part of this question.
Yeah, we discussed the effectiveness against the likes of Clemson. The second part was what will change in terms of blocking schemes, what they will be asked to do, and assessing our roster, what can we expect in a year? I know if it's all related with the rest of the offense, but can we expect a significant effectiveness increase?
Well, I think that they will be better up front this year, assuming that Dickerson and Minshew can be healthy. Blocking scheme-wise, it'll be a little more man blocking, a little less zone blocking, although they had already decided to do a little more of that anyway at Florida State, so I don't think it'll be, you know, a monumental adjustment in terms of what they're asked to do. Some of the technique stuff will be different. You know, maybe some of their zone stuff will be a little more pin and pull as opposed to slide, which is fine. You know, all these things are can be good and bad, right? There's no like right way to do something. There are some wrong ways to do things, like clearly if you had somebody who's just totally unqualified to coach, but that's not been the case, and it won't be the case under Greg Fry. I think he'll do a really good job. But yeah, I think you will see an effectiveness increase, certainly. Also, you're going to have fewer guys to block. By spreading it out, you're going to have fewer guys in the box. I think in some ways that's going to make it a little bit easier, not only on the quarterback, but also at times on the offensive lineman. You're not going to have a billion guys up there crowding the scene. So that, to me, is something that is certainly worth watching.
With Coach Taggart's Gulf Coast offense, can you talk about what will change as far as quarterback responsibilities, reads, and skill set compared to what we've seen the past decade?
Sure. Okay, so the main thing here that I want to point out is that under Jimbo Fisher, they were sort of a ball control passing offense, right? They would control the football. They would move the chains and sort of like try to like stay ahead via the pass. Willie Taggart's offense is more of a running offense. They want to run the football. When they pass, it's not to throw, you know, a 5-yard hook route or like a 10-yard dig. They want to create explosive plays out of the pass game and use the run game to stay on schedule. That's the primary difference in terms of philosophy. Now, alignment-wise, you're going to see the receivers line up outside of the numbers like Baylor does. There are obvious reasons why you don't want to come out and say, I run the Baylor offense because of the other things that happened at that program that you don't want to be associated with. But in practice, there's no doubt there's one school out there that really started doing that, putting the receivers outside the numbers, and that's Baylor. And that is what Willie Taggart's Gulf Coast offense does. The receivers line up quite frequently outside the numbers. What does that do for the quarterback? I'm bringing us back around to the quarterback part of this question. Well, it gives him a lot easier read, to be honest. He's able to look at it and say, what is the safety doing? Is he going to impact the run game or not? Is he lined up way too far away from the box or not? Do I have a one-on-one matchup out here or not? I think that doing that, it certainly simplifies some things for the defense, but it also makes the defense declare its intention via alignment, because there are certain things as a defense, if the receivers line up that wide, that you just simply cannot cover. And so, you know, given that, that's going to make things simpler for the quarterback. There's no doubt. It's not like an NFL style system, but I do think that this change of coaching staff, by the way, came at the exact right time with that, because I think you just watched the Super Bowl where the announcers, either correctly or incorrectly, said the word RPO 700 times. Taggart's not a huge RPO offense, but there's a lot of college concepts that are now being widely adopted by the NFL.
That argument is not as strong in the living room as much as it was even 12 months ago. I mean, it's been remarkable how much that has shifted.
Exactly. No, I agree with you 100%. So that's something to watch there for sure. But the quarterback's going to have fewer responsibilities and easier ones. It's a more college-style offense. Now, their job is to win college football games, which is what they are intending to do with this offense. All right. Okay, Igor, new question here. Who do you think of the new players will have the biggest impact for us on offense and defense?
Okay. The offensive one, I have a feeling we may have the same opinion. If we don't, I'll chime in. Defense, I'm going to go, it's hard not to say Peters, that his skill set and a need and maybe the ability to fit him in situationally. If not Peters, I think you may see a decent amount, not a ton, certainly a lot of depth at the position, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Robert Cooper taking some significant snaps, and I'd be interested to see how much they work old Trench Monster into the plan in year one.
I'm right there with you. I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go with Asante Samuel Jr. actually on defense.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
not a bad pick at all.
Is he the best athlete that they signed? No. Is he the biggest guy? No. But man, he's a hitter, and he absolutely has a great sense for as a play development. He's been coached up. He's a really good football player. And then on offense, look, I'm not going to get too cute with this. It's Treshawn Harrison. Get the ball in that guy's hands. Let him score. Let him make plays for you. I think they're really going to try and do that. That can be your jet sweep guy. That can be your bubble screen guy, at least early on. Maybe send him deep a couple times. I think that's your option to absolutely be the guy there.
Had a feeling that's the direction we were going in. You mentioned it on the pod. Coaches mentioned it at the signing day presser. Number one prospect on their board, a kid that they think is quite possibly the top athlete in the country. They're going to find a way to get that kid, the ball into that kid's hand from day one. So, it would be tough to go in any other direction on offense.
It really would, man. I mean, the guy is just a really talented athlete. There's no doubt about it. That's who I would go with there.
All right. So we had the question about the new, the next question's very similar question. It will just be more in general for both units. Meaning I don't know that, that us calling Cam Akers would necessarily be viable for a breakout, but this is
some shows might
open to the rest. Yeah, yeah. This kid, this running back, we saw a little bit out of him last year, but I think Cam Akers may really explode onto the scene this year. So I'll hang up and listen.
Offensive breakout, I already said Trey McKitty for me is going to be my guy.
Can I go with DJ Matthews? Does he still qualify for breakout status?
Absolutely. He didn't have very much. How many catches did he have last year?
Yeah,
that's true. Not many.
The number of catches. He was moderately
breakout of Jimbo
in the
jail.
Final three games of the year. But yeah, he was, I think there's probably a lot of pieces. There's a lot of, I mean, you could take a flyer on Tamorian Terry. There's a lot of guys that have the ability to break out at that position.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a good pick by you there. I would say defensively, who do you like as your breakout?
Man, is it what I like or is it what I want? I want to say Leonard Warner. I want to say that we've got a significant piece there. Maybe even Josh Brown. I want to say either of those kids. And that's what I'll go with. And hopefully that's not more the optimist in me than necessarily how the play on the field turns out.
I like some of these young defensive guys they got. I really do. And they're going to need him to play well. I like your Leonard Warner pick. Here's one for you. Is Josh Kando count, or did he get to play too much?
I would say he'd probably be the only one that I would not. Yeah, too many sacks. He no longer qualifies as that, in my opinion.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. How about Stanford Samuels III?
I was going to say that or
Hamza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that kid got a chance to see him line up all over the field, and I do mean that. That tough to go wrong with either of those two.
Yeah, I like him. I think that's a good one. He's an excellent football player. You know, Hamza could work. There's some good young talent on this team, man. They definitely need some more confidence.
Similar round of questions here, but who do you think makes the most improvement under the GCO? Which true freshman will make the greatest impact?
Well, I think we already said the true freshman part, but who could make the biggest improvement? Maybe George Campbell, if he can stay healthy. But, you know, again, that's sort of the if he can stay healthy thing. It's going to be one of the tall receivers who's just featured more in just go down the field fast type routes, right? Like literally just go and respect, you know, cause the defense to respect you and double team you some if possible. So take your pick. Is that George Campbell? Is that Keith Gavin? Is that Tamron Terry? Is that Jordan Young, one of the freshmen? It's going to be one of those guys, I think, is going to make the biggest improvement in this offense.
Hey, Nolcast, given the coaching changes, what kind of depth chart changes could we see because of the type of players this staff likes, i.e. 2013 with Waysom being replaced with P.J. Williams? He references desire to have a little bit larger, longer corners.
Defensively, I think they're going to want primarily the same type of player, maybe a little bit smaller at defensive end, a little faster. So, you know, could that help out? Maybe Xavier Peters could see the field more, you know, in pass rush type situations. I would say receivers who don't necessarily know how to run every single route in the route tree could benefit in this offense. So take your pick from any of those guys. I think that physical ability will be more valued in the receiving core relative to sort of like mental understanding than they were under the prior staff.
If I read this question correctly, I think what you're asking is like the biggest shift in what the coaching staff wants from a position. And we've mentioned this a couple times. As far as that goes, like how this staff will look at a tight end, it, the greatest difference in how these staffs look at a particular position is tight end. And really, there's not like two equal talents that one will be chosen to the other because he fits more with this coaching staff's want for that position. So I don't necessarily know that you'll see anybody selected more because they're of a scheme fit than they are necessarily a kind of an equal level of talent.
Which position groups offer the most ability for playing time next year? Similarly, what spring battles do you see as the Louisiana Hot Sauce hottest battle? That is an excellent question right there by Sean. Nice job on that. Okay, so Ingram, which positions are like the most open for playing time?
Yeah,
in your opinion.
Well, I mean, everybody's going to try to stuff quarterback down your throat. And the other one is linebacker. I mean, I think every snap is up for grabs at linebacker. And really, wide receiver, nothing is for sure there either.
I think you're right. I mean, the receiver and linebacker are really the two for me. You know, secondary, we'll see. It'd be hard to not see Levante Taylor start. I think Hamza is going to be a big-time asset in this defense. But, man, linebacker and receiver, there's no doubt. And, you know, maybe off to tackle. We'll see what Greg Fry likes there. I think guard, pretty settled. Center could be an interesting thing. You know, do they want to go bigger there? Can Bavion Johnson stay healthy and be in good shape and challenge Alec Eberle? But, yeah, I think you hit it on the head, man. Receiver and linebacker for sure. And then what spring battle do you see as the Louisiana Hot Sauce hottest battle? Oh, if we assume Nyquan Murray is going to start, right? I think that the hottest battle will be probably for that second corner spot opposite Levante. Is it going to be Kyle Myers? Is it going to be Stanford Samuels III? Is it going to be a true freshman? That one to me is really going to be something to watch.
Mm-hmm. This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolcast. So this is part two of a three-part mailbag series. Huge amount of questions we answered. The third episode's coming later this week, probably around Thursday or Friday. so we'll finish this next time. Today's date is February 19th, 2018. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.